Blog Talk Radio.
Shortly, and he'll call in, and Dr. Chris will call. We'll call Dr. Chris, but It looks like.
But no Brady and Z, though. You know what?
Well,
we're a little lonely, but I think we'll be okay. You and I are, I think, capable of handling this, so this is not the preferable way.
Yeah. Two things I want to start the show out with. One is to say congratulations to Brady's mom. This is their wedding anniversary, and so she's out having dinner. And the other thing is that Brady would love to be on the phone with us tonight, but last night he had the worst problem with his allergies. He blew up like a balloon at practice.
Ooh, wow.
And, in fact, we were figuring we could kick him through the uprights. He was so big. So we had to rush him over to the ER and get some Medrol into him. Yeah, he's
okay?
Fine. He's fine, but he's just on. He's got his dose Medrol pack, and so he is a little jittery. He didn't want to come on.
So we'll list him on the injured reserve for this week, then.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, he'll be back next week, though. Tough kid.
Yeah, he will. Talk about will be back. There's a lot of will be backs all of a sudden. When you take a look at this week's Ring Magazine, or if you take a look at this week's Fight News, you see all the guys returning, and I know it's business, and I know everybody has to make money, but it's certainly some of these guys. I wonder why they're coming back.
You know, what's funny is, I often hear people say, this is prize fighting. Whenever, a big money fight is being made, that kind of eschews the competition. People want to always say, well, it's prize fighting. But isn't part of the prize the legacy, the titles, right?
Mm-hmm.
So some of these guys are coming back for a prize one way, shape, or another, right? Whether it be a financial prize or whether they think they can extend their legacy. I think for a guy like Roy Jones, for instance, I don't think necessarily it's a financial thing. He definitely isn't adding to his legacy right now. I think he sincerely loves the fight game. It's part of the reason why I believe he commentates, and I think he sincerely likes to fight. I think what happens, though, is he has to be convinced occasionally that he can't fight at the level he used to fight at anymore. And sometimes I think he'll fight the kind of guy he's about to fight, in another month or so, or in a couple weeks. And typically he dominates guys like these, like this. And with that being said, that allows him to disillusion himself into believing he still has it at a higher level, which unfortunately he does not.
Yeah.
And that's when he runs into issues. But I personally, I think if the guy, I remember Captain John was like, oh, retire already. But I say, you know what, if the guy wants to fight and, he enjoys fighting and fans still want to come see him, he just has to recognize his limitations. The biggest, one of our biggest failings as human beings is hubris. And so he just needs to recognize his limitations. As long as he does, I don't see why he can't get in a ring and have some fun.
No. And to that matter, the senator is leaving the House of Delegation and wants to get back in the ring too, Mr. Manny Pacquiao.
All right, so how many people actually thought that his retirement was a legitimate retirement? Most people don't believe Floyd's retirement is legitimate, but he stayed out and away from the game longer. A lot of people didn't believe Manny's, retirement was legitimate. People, tended to believe that he wanted to focus his energy on a senatorial run, which you can completely understand. Now that he's, locked up and short of his seat and it's business as usual, he doesn't have to campaign. Now he has time to train and fight again. So that just made sense to me. I think it made sense to everyone. He's a guy who obviously still has it. He looked really good in his last performance against Tim Riley. And so I say, again, why not? He's a big draw. Not the draw he used to be, but he's not the fighter he used to be either. But he still can come back and compete at a certain level. He has a love for the sport. And if he focuses himself and is looking forward to getting in the ring and fighting someone of some import, I say, why not do it? Until he's proven he can't do it at that level any longer.
Yeah. But
now,
do you think
I personally have no interest in purchasing a Manny Pacquiao pay-per-view. However, it would be contingent upon who he's matched against. And if Manny were fighting on regular HBO, I'd watch the fight in a heartbeat. You know,
sure.
So again, I see no problem with you know, him doing what he loves and making a living at it.
Sure. But do you think Jesse Vargas is the guy to come back in the ring with? Given the fact
financially,
that
financially, no. It's not going to be a big pay-per-view sale. You know, Pacquiao will draw with his name. Jesse Vargas hasn't reached that point where he has any crossover status yet. So Pacquiao would have to carry the promotion and carry the numbers of the pay-per-view.
Right.
The same could be said with Terrence Crawford to a certain extent, albeit he is probably a bigger name at this point than Jesse Vargas.
Right.
With that said, Pacquiao would carry the pay-per-view right now with anybody outside of Canelo Alvarez, Miguel Cotto, or Floyd Mayweather Jr.
Mm-hmm.
So from a competition standpoint, I think Jesse Vargas would be the better fight if it were to come between Jesse Vargas and Terrence Crawford. Freddie Roach
mm-hmm.
said he would like one fight before he would put Pacquiao in with Terrence Crawford.
Mm-hmm.
He's his trainer. He knows Pacquiao better than we do from a physical standpoint. So I say, with that being said, I think Jesse Vargas is a good comeback. Pacquiao's been sitting out. He's been campaigning, been focusing on a senatorial run in the Philippines. He wants to focus on boxing. You don't want to necessarily step in with the youngest, hungriest lion, although Jesse Vargas is a young, hungry lion himself. But I think it's a better comeback fight than Terrence Crawford from you know, a strategic standpoint if I'm in Manny Pacquiao's camp, if I'm part of his team.
Sure.
As far as Bob Arum goes, either way, he wins because Crawford, Vargas, both his fighters. So,
mm-hmm. yeah, yeah, I was just.
I know Keith's name had been bandied about at one time.
Yes.
You know, not by the promotions, but just by, you know, writers saying,
yeah.
you know, maybe he'll come back and fight a Keith Thurman. But obviously, you know, Bob Arum wants to keep the promotion in house. It's just,
sure.
you know, it's better for him financially at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, you know what? He wants to see what Pacquiao is going to put in the ring. You don't want to just sacrifice Pacquiao to another promoter's fighter either.
Right.
So
right.
that way, if Pacquiao comes back and he's not what he used to be, and if he's in a position where he's vulnerable to these young and up-and-coming guys, then you'd rather have him lose to one of your own guys, right, than you would
sure.
have him lose to a Heyman guy, which Keith Thurman is.
Right. And Vargas did have, you know, his last time out, it was in March. And he went against the undefeated Saddam Ali,
right.
who he took out with a TKO in the ninth round. You know, so I thought that it was a good matchup for a comeback. But,
yeah.
The other news that came out this week was about Tyson Fury given a doping suspension. Did you see that?
Yeah, but it was lifted.
Yeah, I saw that. The following day, I think it was, they lifted it, saying that it was a provisional suspension in June.
Yeah, he was given a suspension in June. He had planned to appeal it and to fight it outright. He you know, he was very upset about it. It has been lifted. I didn't read the particulars or the details as to why it had been lifted. Didn't even read what he possibly had tested for. I don't know too much about it. I know the suspension was laid down. And then all of a sudden it was lifted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, on the 24th of June, they did a blood test and found a prohibited substance, and it was a mandatory provisional suspension. The U.S. anti-doping rules allow the athletes to challenge it, so that's what he did. And like you said, and in due course, he was found that he wasn't wasn't doping. But now that. That put, I mean, the ankle injury pushed the fight back until November.
Right.
I guess that still remains the same.
Right now, it still is, yes.
Yeah.
And, as, you know, what's going on, too, and I've been reading about this with MMA as well, sometimes these guys get contaminated substances. In Mexico, it's contaminated meat. So, you know, even though I think doping is prevalent in combat
mm-hmm.
sports today, maybe not everybody is 100% guilty or maliciously putting something in their body. Sometimes I think maybe they are just ignorant to some of the ingredients to certain things that they're eating or taking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do you think about Andrew Ruiz's reentry with Franklin Lawrence?
I'm sorry?
Andy Ruiz then the NABA heavyweight champion, is going to fight September 10th.
Who's he fighting? It was somebody.
Franklin Lawrence.
Who's he You know, Andy Ruiz, first of all, he needs to stay active. He's affectionately known as Fat Andy because, you know, he always, you know, had the weight issue. But Andy Ruiz is a skilled guy. You know, he's a standout amateur. His problem is, you know, he's just, again, gradually moving up the level of his competition. But between the Andy Ruizes, the Anthony Joshuas, you have, you know, even the Charles Martin. Charles Martin just got shot in L.A. This past weekend, if you're not familiar. But there's a young and up-and-coming scene of heavyweights. None of them look any more dominant than the other necessarily. Some look a little bit better. But with that said, it's a wide-open division, and we're guaranteed some good fights in the future.
Damn good fights. How about what do you think about the Jacobs and Moore rematch?
Not interested. Part of the reason is, although the fight did not really have a decisive conclusion, you know, he came out and he knocked Moore down. Moore knocked him down. He got Moore hurt. He was swinging at Moore, and Moore kind of broke his leg, basically, or his ankle. So even though the fight didn't have a definitive conclusion, whether Sergio Moore can defeat Danny Jacobs, whether he beats Danny Jacobs or not, the fact of the matter is Danny Jacobs holds the WBA interim belt or WBA regular title. We all know that the WBA super title, the real title, is held by Gennady Golovkin.
Right.
That bears no issue to me. The issue is that with that said, Sergio Moura is not, you know, a top five contender. With all due respect to Sergio Moore, I think he's a very skilled guy, specifically considering he's had a lack of power. Got a draw with Shane Mosley, and, you know, he beat a, you know, primish Vernon Forrest. So the guy is very skilled, but at this point in time in his career, he's not a top five middleweight. So my issue with it is that he's fighting for a title, and really the title is a very minor title because the guy that holds the super title is not being, you know, scheduled to fight Danny Jacobs. So the issue is it should be Danny Jacobs against Gennady Golovkin to settle the WBA issue. That would be mandated. The WBA has typically been trying to mandate the fights between their regular belt holders and super belt holders to clear up the title picture. The reason why they didn't mandate it yet with Danny Jacobs and Gennady Golovkin was because they allowed time for the Canelo negotiations to take place. If Canelo would have fought Gennady Golovkin, WBA would have been fine with it. It would have made the Danny Jacobs fight after that. But because that fight did not materialize, Jacobs holds on to that title, and the WBA hasn't mandated yet. Thus, he's fighting Sergio Moura. Again, my biggest issue is Sergio Moura is a worthy fighter, world-class fighter, but at this point in time in his career, he's not a top-five contender for the middleweight throne. So we should be sorting that out, in my opinion. In my opinion, that's what you should always be sorting out. You know, boxing should always kind of be like the playoffs. There's no regular season. You know, you should always be fighting towards the title. And the best guys should fight the best. That's what we saw this past weekend with Carl Frampton and Leo Santa Cruz. So that's a big issue. Part of the, you know, that's a big reason why I'm not as interested in that rematch, because if Danny Jacobs does win, as he should, it doesn't really mean anything in regards to his legacy necessarily or even his brand.
The other question, I guess, Triple G came out this week and had some statements about who he thought was what he thought of Roy Jones Jr. and what he had thought about who should be the next up. He wasn't too happy about Kell Brooks. Made a couple statements about him, and what do you think about that one?
Who, about Kell Brooks talking about in regards to who, Amir Khan?
No, Triple G talking about whether he thought he said the heavier than Kell Brooks is.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know what? Let me tell you what Triple G has become in regards to this Kell Brook fight. Triple G has become an amazing promoter because Triple G is speaking with so much hyperbole in regards to Kell Brook. Anybody who has even 20/80 vision could see that Gennady Golovkin is bigger than Kell Brook. You know, Kell Brook had on a three-piece suit. Gennady Golovkin had on a T-shirt. And you still look like you could have put Kell Brook inside of Gennady Golovkin. He's a bigger guy. You know, he's a little taller than Kell Brook, not significantly, maybe about an inch, inch and a half. But he's just a bigger guy. Kell Brook is a smaller guy. If they were equal in size, then this fight would be a 50-50-ish fight. But they're not. That's how good Golovkin is. If they were equal in size, Kell Brook doesn't just beat him. You know, he'd be lucky to win. It's a 50-50 fight to me. But to give up that much size to a guy who is at the very least on par skill-wise with you and a monstrous puncher to boot is a recipe for disaster. So what Gennady Golovkin is doing is trying his best to sell Kell Brook as a reasonable challenger to him because he knows that he's going to get called hypocritical for speaking about Saul Canelo Alvarez calling Amir Khan up from 147 to 155 when he's fighting Brook at 160 coming up from 147. He knows there's, he knows boxing fans could look at him as hypocritical, right? So not only that, but he also wants to move numbers, move units. So what he's doing is he's trying to make Kell Brook more formidable than Kell Brook may actually be. I'm not going to say he might not be formidable, but he's like, oh, you know, Kell Brook, he, you know, on a fight night, he's going to be bigger than me, and, you know, he's a big guy, and, he's coming down to 147. Yes, Kell Brook always did have a hard time making 147. He is a big welterweight. But the moment you see him next to Gennady Golovkin, you say, well, there's a difference between the middleweight and the welterweight, albeit a big welterweight. And he's not a big, tall welterweight, but he's a big, physically solid guy, you know? And so they always talk about he had an issue making 147. So, therefore, you know, he's going to be just as big as Gennady. Let me tell you this. Gennady could cut off both of his legs and still barely make 147. So if one guy can make 147 and one guy could not, then obviously the one guy who can't make 147 is a naturally bigger guy. Golovkin looks significantly bigger than Kell Brook. And I'm not talking from a height standpoint. I'm talking from a bone structure size standpoint, broadness of shoulders, things of that nature. I commend Gennady. His English is getting better, and he's doing a good job in English of selling Kell Brook as a more formidable foe than he would appear to be on paper. But that's all that is.
Yeah, he says his walk around weight is about 172. He didn't think he'd have any problem getting down to 147 to take that on. But his question was that at fight night, and you're right, at fight night he felt that Brook would be about 180. I don't know, Ron. What do you think about that? We got Dr. Ron on with us. Ron, what do you think of that?
Good evening, gentlemen. Good evening. I haven't been around for a while because, I have a problem when boxing is a sport that's unique in that injuring your opponent's brain by knocking them out is sort of like the definitive accomplishment. So I really have a problem with this whole sport. So that's why I don't tune in too much because the whole, you know, a great fight is when a guy gets his head knocked out, his brain squashed, and he gets pugilistic Alzheimer's and pugilistic Parkinson's and pugilistic behavior damage, and he gets that what they used to call punch drunk, I guess they call it.
Right.
I really have a hard time with this sport. And I have a dear friend, his name, I think, he was a dentist, Dr. Chris. I mean, he's walking around in a fog. The man can't remember his name.
we're going to call him.
It's incredible. The man took too many punches. You know, he wore a leather helmet in college. He didn't wear a helmet in boxing. It's incredible.
That's not a warning shot across the bow. I don't know what it is.
Hey, Chris.
Boy, oh boy.
We're live on the air, and we have a caller here who I'm not sure whether he has pugilistic dementia or he's saying you have it, but somebody's got it. Do you want to answer that for him?
What was it now? Say it again.
I said that we have a guy that just called in. Who is talking about pugilistic dementia, and he feels that maybe you took too many shots to the head in, either in the ring or on the field, and he thinks you should answer to that. He says you don't remember your name half the time.
He only wore a leather helmet, for God's sake. You know, he invented the term in 1928, punch drunk. It was named after him. Where do you think this comes from?
I had an iron head. I had an iron head.
He was a teenager in those days.
My IQ is getting higher as I get older, even. That's a little effect boxing had on my head.
You detach from reality. But
When I played for Upper Chichester, we had crash helmets. We didn't have them damn. Collindale was the only ones that had the leather helmets. Looked like they bought them off Jim Thorpe when he retired. They bought them from Carlisle Indians. We had first class helmets, Frank. They were beautiful crash helmets. Collindale was they didn't have any money up there, so they bought stuff. Whatever they could get. And Repressy was a spectator. He never had a concussion except when his girlfriend smacked him a couple times. That's all. That's the hardest
really
he ever got hit.
Hear Dr. Chris, because he is a legend in his own mind. The man never stops. He is a legend.
The only time he had a concussion was when his girlfriend rapped him once. You know? What are you doing, Ron?
I'm just over here. I can't believe that there are shows and there are people that love to see people get their brains knocked out, get concussions, and, you know, the whole goal of a good boxing match is to knock the other guy's brains out. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense to me, you know?
Well, you know, I'm going to put you with my wife, and you and Elaine would get along in that respect. She doesn't agree with it, but I personally think football's harder on the brain than boxing. And
boxing, 48% of boxers get some form of brain damage. You know, do you know that? I mean, that's a statistic that's
what's the statistic on football players?
I didn't go there. I don't watch that either.
I'll bet you. Yes, you do. I've seen you watch football.
Yeah, I watched the Super Bowl. I watched the best of the best. That's it.
Well, football's higher. I swear to God, football's higher than boxing. I swear to God. It takes a bit more of a beating. The head takes more of a beating. And today, these guys don't hit hard enough to hurt your head. You know? I watched two guys last night. They fought a 10-round match. Neither one had enough muscle to knock a robin over. I mean, they couldn't crack an egg. Did you guys see that fight last night?
No, I didn't.
I did not.
Oh man, it was awful. Came from California. This guy had a main event, and he was like 12 fights fighting the main event. He had like 10 knockouts.
Okay.
When I say he didn't have a muscle in his body, you'd have to, you know, a search party couldn't find a muscle.
A marathon runner, huh?
He was 6'3", 167 pounds. His name was Benvenides or something like that. Not a muscle in his body. These guys, they could fight forever because they don't hit hard enough to hurt anybody. Hey, I got to tell you.
The losers are, you know, they, of course, they get more injuries than the winners. But, these injuries occur 16 years after these guys leave the ring. 16 years is average. So, you know, I think it's something, you know, something that should be discussed. You know, is there a way to make boxing safer than to have it as a sport that should have been in the Colosseum in Rome, you know, and kill the Christians? Can it be made safer? I mean, I am not naive enough because I am a pragmatist to know that it does help some people make some money. But, you know, it didn't do Sugar Ray any good. It didn't do Joe Louis any good. It didn't do Muhammad Ali any good, you know, except it made all the people around him rich.
Well, Muhammad Ali didn't handle himself properly. He laid on the ropes. He didn't train properly. He brought that on himself.
But,
he
I mean,
fought too long. He fought too long.
All, they became multimillionaires. I think Sugar Ray didn't do too good.
You know.
You know? Anyway,
Sugar Ray Robinson
that's all.
or Sugar Ray Leonard.
Robinson.
Well, you,
no, Robinson.
Yeah, Rob, well, Robinson fought a lot
he
of fights.
He had Alzheimer's disease when he died.
Well, you can get Alzheimer's without fighting. I just,
oh, yeah.
You know.
I mean, you
so what the
die
hell?
Without, you know, you could die without living.
You can't blame the ring.
The
you can't blame the. You can't blame his Alzheimer's. You know, on his boxing career, he could have got it anyway. We were. I was just talking to Doc Skinner. Eugene Schipetti was put in a home for
now?
Alzheimer's when he was 61
right.
years old.
Is he your new doctor now?
Who, Eugene?
You go for your medical care?
Yeah, I'm opening up an office here in Conkerville.
Yeah,
I like
Dr.
the money.
Skinner's
it's easy money. Dentistry,
Dr.
dentistry.
A veterinarian, Chris.
I know he is. I know he is. But we were
and
just.
Yeah, you tell me you're not losing it.
No, we had a good discussion on. Well, he's a boxing fanatic. Oh my God, he's a boxing fanatic. He call. That's what we talk about when he calls. Who's still living in Boothwin and Marcus Hook and Linwood, and the fights. So, how have you been, Ron? You're back
hey,
in Florida for good?
Better, if I was any better, they'd call me. I don't know who the hell they call me, but I need
lucky.
A twin. I'm doing great.
Call you lucky. Yeah.
I'm not lucky. I am lucky. Yeah, I guess I am lucky. Anyway,
but you know what?
I just want to make a point. Not, you know, boxing's here to stay, obviously. It does help to, you know, it is a way of getting kids off the street. I won't deny that. I just want to make a point that maybe it could be made safer. They should look into it, that's all.
Well, nobody's taking more punches to the head than Tex Cobb. And I swear to God, if you didn't know he was a fighter, he doesn't have one trace of being punchy. Not one trace. You know, it amazes me how he walks and how agile he is. He lost a lot of weight. I mean, he moves better now than he did when he was in the ring, for Christ's sake. So, I don't know what the hell to tell you.
Okay, but you know, one case don't make a side. Doesn't make science.
Yeah,
there's always exceptions.
Yeah, there's always you know.
Yeah, and he may have his head may be really thick, and maybe his brain is very small. You know, I don't know.
Well, I don't think it's the largest brain in the world.
I know the man used to. Well, he used to chew chewing gum. I know that by the handfuls. And man, he had a chewing gum ball machine.
You know.
Hey Chris, what are your thoughts on the? Give us your thoughts on the Frampton fight last week. Frampton Santa Cruz.
I didn't hear that, Frank. On who?
Let us give us your ideas on the Carl Frampton fight last week overseas.
Oh, Frampton. Well, I was dead wrong on that one. I didn't think he could beat. I didn't think he would beat that guy. He throws too many. The other guy throws too many punches. You know.
Santa Cruz, yeah.
And he's got a good iron chin, but Frampton stood right in front of him and outboxed him beautifully. Counterpunched him. Got inside of him, got inside those wide swings. He didn't give an inch. He didn't give in an inch. He stayed right there with it. And that guy throws a lot. That guy threw 200 or 300 more punches than Frampton. And he stood inside and he picked him apart. Frampton's a much better fighter than I thought he was. I only saw him one time. And I didn't think he could beat you know, the Mexican. But I was really impressed with him. I loved how he stood in there and he didn't run. Like the Armstrong Bostall fight. That was awful. I didn't see it. You guys told me about it last week. That was awful. It's Armstrong, the left hander. He ran all night long. It was a stinking fight for $69. Crawford, I'm sorry, Crawford. I call him Armstrong. Crawford. Yeah, that was an awful fight. They ought to give him money back. He should refund the money. You know what you guys said to the he could have. I thought he showed Postol too much respect. He ran around the ring. It was an awful fight. I've seen there were 30 seconds, 40 seconds at a time where he didn't throw a punch. He just ran. That Postol followed him around like a beagle. Smelling a rabbit or something.
Zito compared that fight to Fury Klitschko. He said that fight looked a lot like Tyson Fury against Vladimir Klitschko.
No, it stunk worse than that. It stunk. You know, I mean,
hey, Doc,
really.
Chris and Frank, I gotta go. I gotta pick up my granddaughter. Anyway,
okay.
Thank you, and a great show. And you know, just
come
I'm
in.
Not against.
Your comments are well taken, Ronnie.
Yeah.
Well taken.
I know. You could talk forever. I know how you feel.
You could talk forever on you know, but sports are tough, Ron. A tough one ahead. You know that.
Yeah,
Jesus Christ.
I know.
But football,
I really think. Just to take up some time before I have to go to the airport.
I think football's worse. That's my opinion. You know.
All right.
I do. All right, Ronnie. Take care,
thanks,
man.
You guys have a great
program. All right. See you.
Thank you.
Take care.
Ciao.
Yeah, what didn't you think that fight was awful? That Postol fight?
Yeah,
you guys
I
really didn't enjoy it at all. I saw the rerun. I said it was awful.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed in the lack of action. I thought he did what he needed to do to bag the win. You know what I mean?
I think he
himself said afterwards he could have stepped on the gas a little bit more.
He could have made it a better fight. You owe it to the public to have a better fight than that. If you're going to take that kind of money, you owe them a sporting event of some, you know, state. You just can't go out there run around like a clown and run back. You know, it's awful. How the hell are you going to sell that fight again on pay per view? Nobody'd ever buy it again. You know,
yeah,
I thought that was awful.
I think once he realized his foot movement could negate Postol, and then he could just counter him here and there. I think he relegated himself to that. He didn't step in or anything like that. He just realized, you know what, I can win rounds this way and win this fight.
That's right. That's exactly how he fought. He was not concerned about the crowd and the public, enjoying the fight. He wasn't, he wasn't concerned about putting on a good show. He just wanted to win at any price. He wasn't worried about how he looked.
Yeah.
He ran too much. I really object to that kind of fighting. Somebody has to make the fight.
And he made, you know what? And, you know, I also blame Postol because with the two knockdowns, it put Terrence Crawford big up on the cards. And Postol needed to make the fight in order to get back in the fight. All Terrence Crawford had to do. When one guy is doing something that is negating the other guy, it's really up to the other guy to change tactics to try to save the fight for himself. I think Terrence Crawford played it safe. And you know what? He may have said, think about it. Typically, the guy is a pretty exciting fighter. You know, first pay-per-view, first big opportunity. This is when you really want to show off. But he may have bagged it a little bit and said, you know what? Let me get the win now and look good later. You know, I think he probably had that kind of philosophy with him.
Yeah, you might be right there. That might. I never looked at it that way. You know, first time on pay per view, this and that. He was overcautious. He showed Postol too much respect.
Yeah.
You might think he was in there with the hardest puncher in the ring, for Christ's sake. He's a tall, skinny guy. He's not a muscular guy. He's not a physically overpowering looking guy. I don't know why
maybe,
the hell.
The image of
I don't know why the hell Crawford showed him so much respect.
Maybe Crawford had the image of that Matisse knockout in his mind, and said, "You know what? If I go forward, I could run into something. But if I move backwards, he doesn't have the footwork to cut the ring off, and he's slow enough for me to counter, and it's an easy win as opposed to chancing running into something like Matisse did." So maybe that image of that knockout was in his mind. We know Postal's not a powerful puncher at all, but he had a lot of people fooled when he dropped Matisse for the 10 count.
Yeah, well, he punched him right on the eyeball. He went down. He didn't want to get up. His eye was killing him. I've watched a lot of guys and over maybe have 30 or 40 fights in their career. You have a certain temperament. There's certain guys, certain fighters could never put that kind of performance on. Yeah. I was really disappointed in Crawford, to be honest with you, because he can adapt. He could have stepped in and knocked that guy out, I think.
I think
he could have, if he really wanted to and wanted to make it a good fight, put a little pressure on, I think he could have knocked that guy out.
Yeah. But he played it safe. And I think that's.
I mean, you know.
But yeah, I think I totally agree, and that's why I think he deserves a big part of the blame for the fight not being as good as it was. Once he got to the point where, you know, that's one thing I liked about Sugar Ray Leonard. You know, Sugar Ray Leonard, he wasn't just going to outclass you. You know what I mean? Once he got to the point where he could outclass you, he would take you out of there. You know, he wasn't going to leave you hanging around once he realized he was the better fighter significantly, you know. And Crawford chose to play it safe, you know.
Well, Sugar Ray Leonard had a better attitude in the ring. I think a lot of that had to do with the corner man pressing him and making him fight. You know, Angelo Dundee's he's often said many times, get a guy out of there as soon as you can because you never know what the hell can happen. Anything can happen in the ring. You know, head cuts, bang you in the face. You know, it's a dangerous sport. You got to get him the hell out of there early. You can't leave a guy hanging around. And he let that Postol hang around. He was running. He didn't fight 30 seconds out of a 3-minute round.
Nope.
Moving, running, like Jesus Christ, it got all my nerves.
And you know what? And Postol, no idea how to. You know, he's not a fighter who cuts off the ring. Doesn't throw a lot of punches. Hardly threw any. And could never get his feet set to be in position to punch in spite of his range. And part of the issue with the fight going in and part of the issue with it being on pay-per-view was that this is not the first time Terrence Crawford has boxed this kind of fight. He fought this kind of fight against, I think it was Ray Beltran, where he was on the back foot, you know, and just limiting Beltran's output with foot movement. And part of the issue going into this fight was that the two styles may not mesh for an action-packed fight. It could just look like a tactical chess match. But what I didn't like was that Crawford didn't hold his ground at all. What I liked about Frampton, like you said, stood in there and outboxed him. He would see ground. When he would give ground, it was primarily to create punching angles for himself. So, to me, that was how you outbox somebody, a pressure fighter. Now, Postol's not a pressure fighter, but like you said, Crawford knocked him down and hurt him when he stepped in. Once he did that, he stopped stepping in and just played it safe.
Yeah, well, that Frampton was very impressive. I really a gutsy little guy, man, to stay there and counterpunch, try to stay inside those wide punches. You know, I really was impressed with that fight. I even listened to him. He was quite a good. You know, it was enjoyable listening to him after the fight, and I thought that was a great fight. That was a great boxing exhibition. I didn't think he'd come close to beating that guy. I really didn't. I thought that guy was the kind of pressure he puts on you, and he hits hard, and he hits often, he hits to the body. He never lets up, never gives you a second rest, you know, a second to rest. And that little guy stood right in there, man. He didn't back down at any time in that fight. He didn't take too many backward steps. So I would pay $50-$60 for.
Tonight we've got Andre Ward going against Alexander Brand. But what do you think, Clive Ty?
So the big issue, the big thing about this fight is not so much his opponent tonight, but his opponent, if he comes through this fight with a victory unscathed, would be Sergey Kovalev. It's already signed up for November. The date is already locked in for HBO pay-per-view. All Andre Ward has to do is take care of business tonight. So the guy he's fighting, Alexander Brand, you know, is 23-0, 19 knockouts. Basically, he's never really fought out of Colombia. Did have one fight with Badu Jack, lost a split decision. He's proven himself in that one fight at a certain level. Basically, it's looked at by most observers as a tune-up for the Kovalev fight. Alexander Brand offers Andre Ward nothing that Kovalev does. Alexander Brand is shorter than Andre Ward, whereas Kovalev is much taller. you know, different fighters altogether. So this is not necessarily to prepare him stylistically for Sergey Kovalev, but what it is to do is to get him sharp. We know he had been out the ring for 2 years, so, you know, the more a fighter fights, the more sharp they get, you know what I mean? And so he wants to be sharp for the Kovalev fight. So essentially the big thing is that he comes through with a victory unscathed. Alexander Brand, does he pose a tremendous threat to Andre Ward? Most people wouldn't think so. They're fighting at 175. Brand has fought his career at 168, but so has Andre Ward. You know, he's known to be a puncher, but he's gotten a lot of guys out of there that no one's heard of. So most people don't view him as a – but, of course, if he beats Andre Ward, he hits the lottery to a certain extent. So the big thing is to watch for Andre Ward to be preparing himself for Sergey Kovalev in November.
Chris, what do you think?
You know what? I'm surprised Andre Ward's taking this fight. What's the payday? How much is he getting for the Kovalev fight? You know?
I don't know, but that would be his first pay per view. You know, Andre Ward feels that his skill set should put him on a pay per view level. You know, that's the big thing for fighters these days. Plus, it would cement him. He feels as the number one.
Andre Ward should be on a pay per view scale because he's just a great fighter.
Right.
He's a much better boxer than Kovalev. Kovalev is a rougher, tougher guy, you know. And bigger and I'd say stronger too. But
yeah,
Andre Ward's in a class of his own. And the only thing that could beat Andre Ward is if the guy has too much strength for him. He sure in hell's not going to outbox Andre Ward. He has no flaws. Andre Ward has no flaws. He should take this guy easily. I never saw the other guy fight.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what his opponent looks like.
You guys are both right because the fight's going off at 85-1 for Ward.
Yeah.
Whoa, shit.
Yeah.
85-1.
85-1, yeah.
If I fought my wife, the odds wouldn't be that high. You know?
And I'd be betting on her.
you might make more money. That's right. That's right. Holy Christ. 85-1. I never heard of that in my life.
Yeah.
You know? Maybe he has to swim all the way from Columbia to Florida to fight, and that's why the hell the odds are. Maybe he's rowing a boat or something. Of course, you know, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Andre Ward, he picks fighters like Roy Jones did then. Huh?
Right.
Remember some of the guys that Roy Jones fought?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. A guy on a 3-11 shift at Sun Oil or something like that.
Ward, you know, Andre Ward feels like he should get a pass because he said this fight is preparation for the date with Kovalev, which is locked in.
It only takes one headbutt to ruin a fight.
Boy, I saw
that's the bad thing about fighting strangers. You don't know what the hell, you know, a headbutt or some freak accident, and then it goes out the window.
An ankle or something. Oh.
Yeah, you could blow the whole thing. I mean, I remember Frankie Fletcher took a fight. He had a huge contract with Marvin Hagler, and he took a fight and lost it. The Hagler fight went out the window, you know? He never expected to lose, but that was a shame. But, I'm hoping nothing happens to Andre Ward because this could rank up with one of the classic light heavyweight fights of all times. This could rank up there. You know, you got the great, you got a rough, tough puncher and a great boxer. I mean, you don't get it any better than that, you know? So.
Yeah, you know, Andre Ward is one of those fighters who thinks about his legacy, how he will be remembered after his career is done. You know, he cleaned out the super middleweight division essentially with the Super 6. He beat, you know, everybody at 168. And he beat some, you know, borderline.
Yeah, he's got a lot of pride. I know what you're saying. He's got that pride in him, you know.
Yes, he does. He's got
well, they're not going to boo me. No, they'll never boo a fight I'm in. You know what I mean?
Yep.
If I'm fighting a bum, I'm taking him the hell out of there. You know. No, he does it all. Andre Ward does it all. He's one of the most impressive fighters in the last 10 years to me, and I'm sure he'll do his best to try to beat Kovalev and study his style, and I'm sure he'll work like hell on a style to beat Kovalev. Kovalev didn't look too good fighting that other guy about a month ago.
Chilemba?
Yeah, he didn't look too good that night.
Yeah.
That guy kept ducking under his right hands.
Yeah, you know, Chilemba doesn't get the credit he deserves. He's a, you know, a top 10 contender in that division. He's a very, very durable guy. And even though Kovalev didn't look great, you know, it's funny. He didn't look great, but he still won a pretty wide decision over the guy. Andre Ward is better than Ike Chilemba, but he's not as big, and, you know, I don't know if he's as durable. Chilemba also took some solid shots, too.
He could take a shot. He got hit on the back of the head a lot, too.
Yeah, Andre Ward might not be able to stand up to those shots, you know. So that's what makes the fight so interesting, because Andre Ward isn't as, you know, Chilemba's been fighting at 175 his whole career. Andre Ward's coming up from, even though he fought at 173 in the Olympics, he's coming up from 168. You know, and Kovalev is a taller, rangier, you know, harder, bigger, stronger guy, like you said, Dr. Chris.
It's like I say, it's going to draw a lot of interest, you know, a lot like the Hagler-Hearns fight drew a lot of interest. You know, you start thinking about it and say, Chris, this could be a great fight. You knew the Hagler-Hearns fight was going to be a great fight. You know?
And you know what? What you love seeing, and it's something we don't see enough of in this sport, is when you get two guys at the highest level fighting in a fight that is 50-50. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, right. Right. And both guys have pride.
Yep.
Both guys are proud of their styles. They're proud of their record. Or like you say, they're proud of their legacy. They don't want to go down in history as a runner and a guy that backed off, and I was disappointed in last week's fight with Crawford. I really was disappointed. I hope the guy wakes the hell up and realizes, oh, damn, I'm not going to make a good living in this sport if I keep putting out performances like that, you know?
Especially on your first pay-per-view, you know what I mean? And the pay-per-view, I believe they said, you know, they were kind of hesitant releasing the numbers, but rumors had that the pay-per-view only did 50,000. So,
yeah,
you know,
right.
50,000, you put on a stinker, 50,000 people aren't going to buy it next time, you know?
Yeah, you know, like Keith fought, when Keith fought his first pay-per-view, Keith moves back a lot. I think he shows his opponent too much respect. But he made it a good fight because he wanted to win and he wanted it to be a good fight. He's got some pride. And I saw that lacking in Crawford. And I think Crawford's a damn good fighter. I think if his mindset was different, he could have knocked Postol right the hell out. You know? I really do. And he didn't do it. That's disappointing to me. You know? So anyway, so how are you going to do? So how's your gym coming along?
Oh, man, my wife, she's a hustler, man. She's a great business lady. And she's yeah, I think she's the best personal trainer and best trainer, man. I really do.
She's signing a lot of people up for lessons and all?
Yeah, she does a lot of group training. I teach a little boxing and kickboxing to some of her lady clients. She has basically all women clients.
Uh-huh.
Great.
Now, you said you're at Panera's. Is that the Panera's? It's got like the parking lot on the side is a... Like real
exactly.
Hilly,
yeah. We're right on the bottom of the hill. Yep.
Okay, I know exactly where you're at. See, because on my way down to Golf Galaxy, I stop in there and eat all the time.
Yep.
And I know exactly where you're at. Yeah.
You can see our sign. It says Evolve Fitness Studio. So yeah.
That's Capitol Trail.
Yeah.
How much?
Yes, sir.
How much time do you put in there?
It just it depends day to day what she needs. You know what I mean? Just I teach, you know, like three classes a week, and then you know I'm in there working out. It just depends what she needs.
You know, there's so many people in Delaware that want their sons. They want their sons to learn how to box.
Yeah.
And they're always asking me. I said, really, the sport isn't being taught anywhere. There's, the YMCA's aren't doing it anymore. I said, they're not boxing. There's just you know nothing going on. And a lot of guys went, and they said, do you know a place I could take my son? And I said, no. And if you, you know, I think if you get the publicity out there a little bit, I think you could draw a lot of guys in and have a nice schedule, you know. What do you do full time? Do you do this full time or you got another job?
Oh, I'm a documentary filmmaker.
Okay. Okay.
Are the Tiberi still running there, Jim? I know they were
They're not doing anything. No, Davey's. No. No, they're not doing anything. Davey's not in it anymore. He's trying to build up his security business, and Joe's not training anymore.
Oh wow!
And far as I know, Nick is in it promoting anymore. Nothing. There's not a hell of a lot going on down there.
Did they close the gym too? Or?
Yeah. The gyms have all closed.
Oh.
There's no gyms. There's nothing going on down there. That was such an active town. All my life, Wilmington had boxing gyms and amateur fights going on all over, and this has come to us. Came to a screeching halt.
Funny thing is, there are a couple gyms, but they're out in Newark. There are no gyms in the city. Well, you know, the one gym I train at's in the city, but there are really no gyms in the city. They still teach down at West Center City, so West Center City, but that's about it. It's what it is. It's kind of going more out to the county and to the suburbs, because you know what? A lot of these guys now aren't just training boxing; they're doing MMA, and you know, and so what's happening is these instructors are now saying they could really monetize that whole crowd, and so they're getting more of their clients from Newark and those places as opposed to the city.
Yeah, there's a lot of big boys that want to get in at MMA. I don't know why. But they want to get into it, and we've got a lot of interest in it around here in Delaware County. A lot of interest. You'd be shocked. I'm shocked at the number of kids that are getting into this quadrangle sport. You know, that's a nasty sport. And yet, I can't believe the number of guys that are in it and the shows that they're putting on around here. Everybody's in MMA, you know. They go, what? You guys are nuts. And they have to learn boxing to fill in with the other parts of the, you know, because somebody, if you got to know boxing or somebody's going to kick your head off.
Yeah.
You know?
So what happens is that, you know, you own a gym in Delaware, instead of opening it in the city, you know, and that way only having, you know, one or two guys who seriously want to box, right? And as opposed to not wanting to, you know, a lot of the clientele with the shooters in Wilmington don't want to go into Wilmington. So you open it in Newark, right, and you only, you know, that one or two guys from the city who are serious about boxing, they'll come out to Newark to train, and that way you're closer to, you know, the majority of your clientele, and that's what's happening. Because, you know, even some of the guys, like I know one guy who actually took a couple fights out of my gym, the gym I train at, which is a boxing Muay Thai gym.
Uh-huh.
He was an MMA fighter, but when he came to our gym to learn boxing, he fell in love with boxing and started boxing. You know what I mean? And that's what happens to some of these guys. So we got a lot of guys who are going into boxing a little late, but a lot of them are transitioning from MMA because they're falling in love with the striking aspect of boxing.
You know, when I was growing up, most of your boxing was inner cities. That's where all the gyms were. Like, you're right in that respect. Now, we got kids out here in Conkerville that are doing MMA, going down and fighting at the different arenas. They're going down to Atlantic City. They're in the MMA. You know, a lot of guys have taken karate at these karate gyms. These guys are branching off from karate into boxing, and then they're going and fighting in the MMA, you know, in the quadrangle. And I think that all these massive number of karate gyms are bringing back a different type fighter.
Yeah.
Like you say, some guys become boxers. Now I notice I see a lot of kickboxing on television now.
Yeah.
You know, that's coming back.
Yeah.
So we got to represent. we gotta get guys like Repesi here.
you would love it, right?
The thing is, all these guys are trained. You know, if you look at the traditional dojo, like when you know, 20 years ago, everybody was trying to fight like Bruce Lee. You know, that's what it was kind of about. It was about that style of martial arts. All those places now are kind of have, you know, revamped themselves, and now they're teaching the MMA because that's where the money is for them, you know.
And it's getting so popular. My God,
yeah,
it's popular.
Yep. So you make more money teaching that than you do teaching, Bruce Lee-style kung fu or karate. You know, you'll make more money doing that. And because of that, I study Muay Thai. Because of that, Muay Thai is more popular. Kickboxing is more popular because if you want to do MMA, you have to have all this stuff. So, you know.
You got to know more. You got to know more than just boxing because you can't just send a fighter in there and a guy starts kicking at him. A fighter wouldn't know what the hell how to defend. I mean, they don't know how to ground fight. It takes a long time to be a complete MMA fighter because you got to learn three or four styles. You got to be a good boxer, a good wrestler, a good ground game. You know, it's damn difficult and nasty. Man, it's nasty.
And you know what? What happens, though, is the MMA fighters, they never develop their hands to the level that a boxer does. So what happens is we get guys that come in and want to, you know, that train MMA and didn't want to learn to box for MMA, but they start liking it because they see how, you know, in a sense, how scientific it is and how much more dedication it takes. You know, an MMA fighter doesn't need to box to the level that a boxer does. And so when they come in our gym, they kind of fall in love with the challenge of, you know, the reason why you do things is because you want to be the best at it you can be. So they start boxing, and they're like, they just want to be better and better and better. And that's why they fall in love with boxing.
If they concentrate too much on boxing, their ground game goes, and the opponent will tackle in and half kill you on the damn floor, you know?
So it's
very difficult to be great at all three or four things that you have to do to be in that quadrangle. But the popularity is just phenomenal. I'm amazed at the popularity of sport. Every damn place you go, you see Las Vegas is a sellout. There's a million people there. There's no empty seats.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I watch it. I enjoy that too. So I watch it.
Yeah, I get a kick out of it. I'd like to see a little more of the boxing skill. I mean, you're not going to see any combinations in there.
Oh, no,
because
no,
while
like
you're
that.
Throwing a combination, somebody's going to kick you right in the face, you know. And you got it's one punch at a time, and
you don't see the level of craft that you see in boxing. That's the biggest.
Yeah, you don't see the
guys are flipping punches like that, and the stance of boxing, it makes you susceptible to a takedown. If you throw too hard a punch, the guy can duck under and just tackle you. You know, so they really are different. They're different sports. They really are.
Yeah, it's mixing three sports together like that is tough. It's tough to master. There's a big guy. There's a big, heavy guy. He got his hair dyed yellow on top now, but he's been in that quadrangle for 10, 12 years. He used to be a vicious puncher. He's a fat. Kind of a fat guy, not real tall, maybe 6'1". You know, where these other guys are 6'3 and 6'4". I'm trying to think of his name. But he's about the best. He's a... say that again.
Mark Hunt?
Yeah.
Mark Hunt was a great, powerful kickboxer. Yeah. Could punch
He could hit
ball.
Like a damn mule.
Yeah, boy.
He could hit like a mule, and then all of a sudden I see him in his MMA, and he's over the hill now. He's been at it so long, but he's probably the best hand fighter in the whole MMA. He doesn't have a ground game.
He's got a ton of knockouts.
Oh my God! One shot at a time too. Boy, he can punch. I think he would have been a great fighter. He should have been a heavyweight.
Yeah, you know, and he's not fast. He's slow. But, you know, even on these taller guys, he's able to cut that octagon off and close his distance and land his right hand. He does that with his left hook because he's powering both hands. but he's always able to close that distance typically and knock these guys out. They have to take him down to beat him.
Yeah, they got to go to the only way. That great big guy, Brock Lesnar.
Yeah.
Yeah, he beat him. He beat him with a ground game. You know,
laid on top of him. That's what you got to do. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a damn big guy, isn't he? Big.
Yeah.
His head's
yeah.
big. He's like 285 pounds, solid muscle.
But you notice when they were standing up, Brock Lesnar was fighting like Terrence Crawford.
Yeah.
You know, when
yeah.
he would tackle Mark Hunt when Mark Hunt got close, but when he
get
when
the
he
hell
was,
out of there.
Yeah. Yeah, he was.
Mark
like
Hunt
Terrence
gets near
Crawford
you. You better get
yeah.
the hell away.
Yeah.
Get the hell away from that right hand. That's
close to him at all.
That's like a rattlesnake.
I didn't know he could move so fast around that octagon.
He
didn't want to get close to that. He couldn't.
He don't want to get close to that right hand. He'd already been knocked out a couple of times
oh,
by
yeah.
good punchers.
Oh, yeah.
Big as he is, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But Mark Hunt, I'm going back 10 years ago, deadly right hand puncher. I thought at that point, I said, why don't somebody take this guy and make him a heavyweight? It
yeah,
wouldn't take much
to
finish.
You know
I think he would have been
that.
A great heavyweight.
Oh, my God. And, you know, he has an amazing chin, too. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, his power equals his chin. He would have been a hell of a heavyweight.
Oh, my God. Whenever I see him in the MMA, I watch, I my wife says, this is awful. I can't believe your wife. This is barbaric. I said, I'm watching this guy, Mark Hunt, one night. She's complaining the whole time. Now, this guy can fight and he can punch. He can punch with the best of the heavyweights,
he'd
heavyweight
have made more
boxers.
Money as a boxer. He'd have made more money because he. I think he'd have been.
I think you're
guy.
Right. I think
yeah.
he would have been a he would have been fighting for the title. It wouldn't have taken him long, you know. He would have been one of the old style fighters because he, like you say, he's slow. You know, he would have had just a little bit of defense, and you could have brought him along. He would have been fighting for the title inside of 10 fights. You know, with that punch he had.
You know, if he could cut off, if he could cut people off in that octagon, he could do it in the ring. So, you know,
yeah,
in the ring has corners. So, you know,
I agree with it. I agree with it.
Yeah.
Hey guys, we're right up against our time limit, so.
All right.
Another great show. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate all your time.
All right, and you know what? I don't know why I keep calling Crawford Armstrong. I don't know why. Maybe it's the first sign of senility. You think so, guys?
Huh? Nah. Well,
I hope the hell is not. I don't want to remember that fight.
For some reason, you remember the name Postal, so you know what I mean.
Hey, I taught my grandchildren. I had their first boxing lesson today. I had them throwing left hooks behind the right hand. Yeah, boy, I had it all. They were my one grandson can fight. He's good, and but he shows up in flip flops. I said, "What in the hell are you doing? Well, you can't learn to fight because you don't know where to put your feet with flip flops." I said, "I told his father, buy him a set of boxing shoes. You know, come and learn how to fight in flip flops. What the hell are you doing? You know,
be ready for that quadrangle. That's what it is." You know,
yeah,
you
that's
know,
it. Yeah.
Know,
oh, he. Yeah.
Yeah.
He loves the wrestling. He's into the wrestling thing. He loves
yeah,
that.
Is.
You know. He, his father wants him to learn because I think you got to learn to handle yourself today because there's too many smart asses
yeah.
out there today.
Yeah.
This world is crazy today, man.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
You better learn to fight. Ah, damn. All right, guys. I'll talk to you next week. All right.
Take care.
Take
have
it easy.
Have a good one.
I want to stop and say hello. I know exactly where you're at. I want to stop and say hello. All right, I'll see you guys.
Hey, take care. Ty, you want to lead us out?
Oh, man, what a great show. Even Sands, Brady, and Zito, although we missed him. It was great having Dr. Repesi on, although what he was saying was antithetical to the love we have for our sport. But he says it out of concern, so it's well received. Always a pleasure to talk to you and Dr. Chris Blitch. Bob is our co-pilot. See everyone next week.
Before we end, let's get an update on Mr. Mel.
You know, he's doing better. He's home. He's resting, you know, one day at a time. You know, he's on
good.
Prayers, obviously.
Yep. And we still have him on the prayer line here. Ladies
yes,
and gentlemen, these programs
you,
are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, men and women of police and fire services. When you're out there and see somebody in a uniform, remember they're the ones that run in where everyone else is running out. Please, one of the best things you could do is give them a handshake, a wink, or tell them, be safe, brother or sister. These programs are also dedicated to those who've lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcap, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Patrolman David Crawford, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman and Officer Crispin, Lakeland PD, Deputy Barbara Pell, Broward County Sheriff's Office, Chief Al Hogle, Longwood Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Patrolman, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township, PA Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Chief Mike Goodwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, MIT Officer Sean Collier, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, Deputy Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Office, Patrolman Robert Germain, Windermere, Florida Police Department, Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, Patrolman Charlie Condit, Tarpon Springs Police Department, Sergeant Robert Wilson, Philadelphia Police Department, Louisiana Trooper Steve Vincent, Harris County Deputy Sheriff Darrell Goforth, Prince William County Deputy Sheriff Ashley Gidden, Euless, Texas Patrol Officer David Heffer, Hillsborough County Sheriff Deputy Charlie Kotloff, and all the men and women from Dallas and Kansas City that have lost their lives. My brothers and sisters, although you've lost, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, at some time we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the rose rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields and the sun shine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hallow of his hand. Good night. God bless and stay safe.
Shem alek ma yelama, shem ma hezahir ma, son ashen evorat fed, hakuig again ma yelama.
County Dispatch to 1999. County Dispatch to 1999. County Dispatch to 1999. All units be advised, 1999 is responding to his last emergency. May God rest his soul. Good night, Bob. We love you and we miss you.